Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. There, it's time to pack a lunch, maybe go for a drive and enjoy, because on today's show, we bring you from LenPenzo.com, Steve Harvey and Warren Beatty. I'm just kidding. Even those two couldn't take credit for this mess. It's Len Penzo. And from Control Your Cash and Investopedia, it's Greg McFarlane. And from a little site called Afford Anything, Paula Pant. But that's not all. On today's FreshBooks FinTech segment, we welcome the founder of the new app, Rise, Making Money Sexy, Justin Howell. Now here he is, the guy herding this pack of goldfish, Joe Saul-Sehy.
And a happy Friday to you. Hey, everybody, welcome to another weekend party. I am Joe Saul-Sehy, Average Joe Money on Twitter, and I can't wait to get this party started. You know what always starts a great party is a trip to stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. Because if you're looking to save money, refinance your debt, head to stackingbenjamins.com/SOFI, because they're the leader in marketplace lending. Over 200 to... Oh, what's that all about? That's my cold is what that's all about. Over 225,000 people have refinanced debt with SoFi. SoFi is going to help you finance your regular student loans, your parent or your plus loans. They've funded over $15 billion in loans to date. And listen to this. They've saved members over $1.45 billion. Our friend Dan McAllen over at SoFi tells us that it takes only a few minutes to find out how you can work with them. So what are you waiting for? StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI. They don't only handle student loans, but also personal loans if you're consolidating that credit card debt and also mortgages. They're giving you $100 if you use our link for your personal loan or student loan, stackingbenjamins.com/SOFI. And you know the place that calls SoFi number one wherever they compete is our super longtime sponsor, Magnify Money. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/Magnify Money for more on them. Here's what you're going to find when you go to Magnify Money. Is that very quickly you have a list of the top checking accounts, the top savings accounts, the top debt products, whether it's car loans, regular loans. They're getting into mortgages, you name it. Magnify Money has it. StackingBenjamins.com/Magnify Money. And let's take our normal Magnify Money look on Friday here to see exactly what interest rates are. Have they moved? That's the big question. And if we head right here, I just went to Magnify Money, and now I have credit cards, bank accounts, loans, other products. I'm going to click on savings accounts and hit get personalized offers, and bam, there it is, 1.25 PurePoint Financial. And this is a new one. It says there's a $10,000 minimum balance, but they will pay 1.25, and they get a C when it comes to fine print. See very quickly, I've got all that information, and then I have an apply now button. And the only time that I have to give up anything about who I am is when I click that apply now button. I can do everything I want in complete anonymity. StackingBenjamins.com/Magnify Money. Poplar Direct, still at 1.15. We've talked about them before. Of course, they get an F for way too complex, as Magnify Money puts it, way too complex on the fine print side. With Salem 5 Direct at 1.1%, $100 minimum balance, and a B on their fine print being really the first option here that looks like it's for the rest of us. All right. Hey, we got a great show today. We got our regular contributors here, and we've got Justin from Rise. Can't wait for you to hear all about Rise on our FreshBooks FinTech segment. So let's get this party started, huh? All right, let's walk across the basement here and see if we can get the greatest minds in finance back on My Dad's Shortwave. After our 1 week off, it's good to talk to our original three contributors, I think. Let's start off in Las Vegas, where Paula Pant joins us.
Joe, did you just say it was your dad's shortwave? I thought it was your mom's.
It's my dad's. It's always been my dad's. It's always
your dad's
been.
Shortwave in your mom's basement.
It is.
Dude, how did I never put that together until now?
And if my dad ever comes back home, we'll have to give it back to him. But that's a whole different story. So, but until then, I get to talk to you. How have you been?
I am excellent.
And your 1 week break from us, was that good?
Oh, Joe, I missed you so much. My heart bleeds across the laptop.
I bet you did. You had nothing else going on. Cried the whole time. Oh, yeah. Speaking of crying, I have to talk to Len Penzo again.
Thank you. I'm sorry I stood you up last week, Joe. That work just pulled me at the last minute. It's just my sincere apologies.
That's all right. Well, time flies, but that was 2 weeks ago. And certified financial planner Katie Brewer sat in for you, Len. So
I appreciate her filling in for me. And again, I'm sorry. And boy, 2 weeks, time does fly.
But she's no Len Penzo. She's very
lucky
nice.
For her.
right. I don't know why I call on you and I immediately rip you. I apologize for that. I don't know what came over me.
You call on me?
Yeah. I immediately, it seems like every time I say Len Penzo, then I come out with some disparaging remark and I don't know
that
why.
Happens to lots of people, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You're normal, Joe. You're normal.
a guy halfway across the ocean who's normal, the one and only Greg McFarlane.
Hey, at least Len gets ripped on. Nobody even mentions that I wasn't here last week. Paula isn't here for a week, and you're ready to retire the show and mourn for her.
Certified financial planner Mary Beth Storjohan sat in for you, Greg.
I didn't realize that each sub represents a particular regular.
Yeah, she didn't have the same point of view you had, though. You've got a particularly Greg McFarlane-ish point of view. We did miss you, but Mary Beth sat in.
Well, I miss you too.
Well, thanks,
and
baby.
I can't say I missed or didn't miss Mary Beth because I don't know her.
No.
But I'm sure she's delightful.
She was fantastic. She and Paula sat in the closet together. And
it's totally true.
Did they come out of the closet? That's what I want to know.
We eventually had to come out of the closet given that we were in it one. And, you know, she's not here anymore.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. So let's move on.
I record out of a microphone in my closet.
Yes. And we're going to talk.
Literally in my closet, because that way there's no traffic noise or, you know, any other ambient sound that's distracting from our intelligent and witty conversation.
It's amazing the number of podcasters who podcast from the closet. Let's from that big aha, let's move to our first article from raptitude.com. First time we've been here. This is a blogger named David, and David has this post that says, we're not materialistic enough. And I was very surprised, Mr. Len Penzo, that we need more materialism in our life, according to David here.
Yeah, you know, he was, and I don't know if I'm the right guy to go first on this one, but let me just dig right in, shall we?
Yes.
Okay. You know, the article, he had a lot of questions, it seemed like. You know, he basically said, I'm going to quote him directly here. We have low standards for what physical objects we trade our money for, right? And I totally agree with that statement. But my reply to that is, but what do you expect? Of course we do. What do you expect? That's because our money is not the same quality as it used to be either. And of course, you're probably saying, oh, here goes Penzo again. But it's true. Our money since 1972 has been decoupled from gold and it's been devalued and credit is given out freely and at low interest rates to many, many, many people. And as a result of that, you're going to get the physical consumerism that he's railing about here and the lack of quality, because that's what follows when you debase your money.
So, you're
so to me, it's not a big mystery. It's a mystery to him, but it's not a mystery to me. This all comes down to devaluing and debasing our money.
So you're saying because money's so easy to come by, we just use it to buy trash.
I'm saying that's a big reason, but he's also lamenting quality too, right?
Yeah.
Let me give you another quote. He says, if we were things lovers, we'd have better things. He says, market competition would drive products to become better. That's true if our money was sound, because it would be more valuable and harder to come by and we would demand better quality. But because it's not, we've got the reverse. We've got currency wars. We've got countries trying to undercut each other and devalue their currencies. And then that means the only way competition, people can compete for financial survival, is to make cheaper stuff. It just has to. You have to make things cheaper to undercut the next guy. That's just the way it is right now.
Boy, Len Penzo's in a salty mood today.
Is that salty? I don't mean to come off sounding salty. It's to me, it's just obvious, but I know LenPenzo.com readers were probably, most of them would probably figure this out too, but it's not a mystery.
Well, but Greg, do we need to take it like Len is to a macroeconomic level, or seriously, are we too busy trading our stuff for things that don't last and that we don't really need?
Much like I could take almost any topic and change it into a discussion on gun rights, Len can take any topic and turn it into a plebiscite on gold.
I totally agree. Yeah. Amen, brother.
That was amazing and seamless.
Yeah.
But was it good, Greg? But Greg, come on now.
I agree with you, but for different reasons. I think this article is nonsensical and simplistic. As individuals, we have different desires for what we look for in whatever product we want to buy. For example, furniture. If you're established and you don't plan on moving anywhere for the next couple decades, then you will buy a Thomasville oak chest and save money in the long run. If you're a college kid who lives in a big enough city, you will go to your local IKEA and spend $30 on a pressboard bookshelf that you have to assemble yourself with a hex wrench. The author is mistakenly putting us all in the same group. And this has little enough to do with your life station or how much you can afford. I mean, I have a little bit of money and I still buy $12 sunglasses at Walmart. Why? Because I'm constantly losing them or scratching them or sitting on them. And for someone who actually has the inclination to take care of their sunglasses and to value them, then yeah, by all means, buy the Luxottica frames.
Paula, what do you think about this? Because when I read this, that we're not materialistic enough and we don't value our stuff enough, I immediately thought of you.
Oh, why? Am I not materialistic enough, Joe?
No, I was thinking this seems like something that you would rail about the fact that, you know what, we need to trade our dollars for quality stuff.
Yeah, you know, I agree with the author. My interpretation of this article is that the author is saying that we have gotten away from fine craftsmanship. And back in the day when most things were hand-carved, there was craftsmanship. But now that we have industrialization and mass production, those things certainly have many benefits. They've put shoes on the feet of millions of people who otherwise wouldn't have had it. But, there are two sides to every coin. And one of the consequences, for better or for worse, is when you mass produce items cheaply, you get away from fine quality craftsmanship and you go into the Walmartization of material goods.
Len, is the cost too high? I mean, getting back to your macroeconomics, for us to think about, you know, quality, because I can still read Consumer Reports and make sure that I'm buying, you know, a 5-star refrigerator or whatever it might be.
No, there's still quality. There are, you know, there's different levels of quality, right? So quality is just an economic decision that the consumers make, right? You pay for quality or you don't pay for quality. There's plenty of things out there that are good quality and cheap that can be mass produced. And refrigerators is a good example. I still think today, our last refrigerator we bought, probably 15 years ago, it's still running and running just fine without any problems. So there's still... You can still get quality out there, but there's so many things that aren't quality that break quickly. Like the guy made the example of the stapler, right? He bought a $63 stapler because he wanted, you know, better quality. Hey, that's fair. If you want a good quality thing, you want to pay for it, go ahead. But if you don't, like Greg's sunglasses, $12 sunglasses, or you want a $5 stapler, you know, it's actually a low quality is a good thing. It gives you consumers more choice. You know, you can trade your dollars for how much quality you want.
But Greg, reading from this article, I love this part about the McMansions. He says a $750,000 McMansion isn't a nice thing. It costs a lot, but it's still cheaply made, the product of numerical calculations made by some distant development firm. Isn't part of the onus here just on a consumer who doesn't care? I mean, they wouldn't make McMansions if people didn't buy them.
Has this guy examined the construction of every single $750,000 house in the country? Who is he to question the construction of these houses? By the way,
I agree.
A Target, you can get a signature Nate Berkus, who I guess is famous, limited edition swingline stapler for $16. That's the most expensive one I could find. This guy spent $63 on a stapler. This is awfully selective. I mean, I'd be willing to bet for myself, maybe I'm older than him, that I will use fewer than 200 staples for the rest of my life. Office Depot sells boxes of 5,000 staples for less than $4. So in the rest of my life, I'm guessing, I think it's a pretty liberal estimate, that I will use 16 cents worth of staplers the rest of my life. Oh my God, I sound like Trent Hamm. This is a weird item to splurge on. And then to turn around and bitch about people who spend $750,000 on a house. Let's see which asset has a better chance of appreciating over the next 5 years, that house or his stapler. Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think I hate this guy. And jury's still out, but he is Canadian, which is not a point in his favor. By the way, while researching this, I figured out why Office Depot's major competitor is called Staples. It took me 17 years. I might be an idiot.
Well, you got to tell us now because I don't have any idea.
Well, they're playing on the double meaning of the word
Staples. I know,
staple.
I'm kidding.
You can buy the bent pieces of metal to keep your paper together.
Yeah.
And staple also in the sense of a main or important element of something.
Yeah.
Staples more environmentally friendly than paper clips?
I think Joe just mocked me. I'm not sure.
Well, I was trying to crack a joke and it didn't come out right. But I love
because I was dumb enough to take it literally.
But I do love Greg when I do that before I'm like, oh yeah. And you kind of hit yourself on the head, you're like, yeah. Unbelievable. I missed that one.
It also took me 17 years to realize that the Minnesota Wild NHL team that's a noun, not an adjective.
Greg, why 17 years? That's awfully specific.
Well, in the Minnesota Wilds case, they were founded 17 years ago. Staples, I think, well, I moved to this country in 1995, and I'm trying to think if Staples had expanded to where I happen to be living anytime before 2000. It might have been right around 2000.
We did say this earlier, by the way, but we should do it now, which is that Greg has a microphone issue, so that's why he sounds a little different today, but we're having that fixed next week. Paula, you were going to say?
I was just going to say I'm extremely impressed by his ability to know when a big box office supply store opened up in his location.
Yeah, but are you surprised?
that Greg remembers that?
Yes.
Jeez, you know, I really have mixed emotions about this. I'm going to have to process.
Why mixed emotions? I don't know what there is to have mixed emotions about. Either it just doesn't surprise me because Greg's a walking encyclopedia. He just bang, the date always seems to be there, which amazes me. Let's move on, guys, to the reformbroker.com, Josh Brown's site. And he has this piece that came out a couple weeks ago called Why We Dig In. And he said, every day we're presented with a choice, continuing on with a given long-held belief or changing our minds. New evidence presents itself or different ways of thinking become available. Do we amend what we've already thought and said? Or do we persist on the road we've already been head down stubbornly? So it sounds obvious and simple, but in practice, it's not. We get cornered by the things we've already said publicly. And he goes on basically to say that as we do things publicly, we force ourselves into a corner, and then we feel like we have to sit in that corner. Paula, do you think that's true? Do we get stuck?
I think there's an element of truth to it. And part of it depends on your own internal composition. Are you the type of person who makes lots of pronouncements publicly and never really holds true to any of them? Or are you the type of person who makes few pronouncements publicly and takes them with seriousness and gravity? And what audience are you making those pronouncements to? All of those kind of play a role in whether or not the announcement has the psychological effect of backing you into a corner. The other thing that backs us into a corner is when society tries to put us in a box and then reflects that box back at us. And so people identify you with X, and then you start to internalize that. So that's the other cornering.
Yeah, and that's hell.
It can be. And I think the worst of it is that it's so subtle. A lot of people aren't aware of it for a long time. And even once you become aware of it, breaking out of that can require work.
So, Len, it's funny, to Paula's point, people get backed into a corner, and sometimes we have to change our mind with investments. Have you had a time where with your investment strategy, you realized that something that you held true or as true was false and you had to change your mind?
Yeah, you know, lots of times, let me put it this way. Basically, what this article boils down to is having an exit strategy, right? And I've always talked about, and I think I've talked about it here on this podcast many times, you know, the importance of having an exit strategy. If you have an exit strategy where you set benchmarks for if you buy a stock, at what point do you want to sell when it's high and what time do you want to sell when it's low, this becomes a moot point, right? You don't worry about going back on your word. The people who have to worry about this are the people who don't have an exit strategy. And to that aim, you know what? I'd been in trouble if I didn't have exit strategies a few times because I bought some pretty bad stocks, you know, made some bad moves.
I see. So you're saying you believe that X is a great stock, so you buy it. And then because you have an exit strategy, you don't have to worry about, you know what, I was wrong, and it automatically sells if I've got a stop loss.
Yeah, I don't feel like I have to eat my words or anything, because I've kind of predicted my own bad pick by saying, hey, this stock could go down 10%, maybe, if that's where I set my threshold and my stop loss. And when it gets there, bam, it's done. I'm gone. I sell it. I'm out. Oh, well, easy come, easy go. And it's easier to take that way. So I don't even have to worry about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, nope, it totally makes sense. Greg, you've had to write about tons and tons of companies for Investopedia. Have you found that part of that is making some difficult calls and then 6 months later going, yeah, that wasn't quite so good as I thought it was?
Me personally, no. But I want to ask Lynn, which Josh Brown in the greater New York area is more reprehensible? The guy who used to kick for the Giants and who beat up his wife last year, or the guy who wrote this article?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yeah. Is that a rhetorical question? Do I know what rhetorical means? Personally, I mean, I used to think, as far as changing my mind about an investing idea, I used to think the mutual funds in general were the greatest thing ever. And for people looking to protect their investments and not build wealth too aggressively, they might be, but certainly not for me. I used to think land was a fantastic investment without respect to where it was located. What does Will Rogers say? Or what did he say before he died? Buy land, they ain't making any more of the stuff.
Right.
If it was dry and near a road, it was good enough for me. And then I discovered that a 3-acre parcel that I own has lost half its taxable value over the last 8 years and is never going to be worth more than what it was back when mastodons were frolicking on it. By the way, if any of the listeners are looking for a place to operate their new marijuana grow business with plenty of fencing and unfriendly neighbors and roads that will tear up the undercarriage of any passing police cruiser, please let me know.
You've got the perfect spot.
That's not what it was intended for, but it seems to be all it's useful for.
Hey, Greg, I'll get back with you right after we're done here, okay?
All right.
Paula has...
He's got to have something to do when he's in the gold bunker.
Paula, you have some very strong convictions. Have you had times when you had to back down from a investing conviction that you thought was true?
Gee, do I have strong convictions? I mean,
not at all.
I believe in index funds. I believe in rental properties. What else do I believe in, Joe?
Well, index funds is an example. Let's say that that, where were you before index funds?
Before that, I was investing in mutual funds only because I didn't know that index funds existed.
Okay. And so then instead of doubling down on mutual funds, you determined that this was better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just didn't know that index funds existed. So when I found out, I was like, dude, this is like mutual fund plus, you know, it's broader and lower fee. So that didn't seem like a pivot. It just seemed like an improvement.
You haven't had a deeply held belief that you had to come back and say, no, that didn't do it.
I mean, I'm trying to think of one specifically related to finance or investing.
Joe, I've got one.
Probably
can I share
not.
One? Can I share mm-hmm. one with you?
Yeah.
This is actually documented on my blog over the years, since I've been doing this for 8 years. I don't know so much this is investing, but it's a financial position. I was strongly in favor of paying off the mortgage early for many, many, many years. And I spent a lot of money paying down my mortgage. And then about 7 years ago, I had a change of heart and I went the opposite direction. And I felt it was not worth paying down the mortgage early and just running, as a matter of fact, taking as big a mortgage as long a period-wise of mortgage as you could, and then just paying down the minimum every month. And that's about as 180 degree as you can get. So, you know, that was one that's, it happens, right?
Well, I wasn't even just there, Len. I thought that, you know, a 15-year mortgage was way better than a 30-year mortgage until somebody pointed out to me that companies have debt and they have debt at whatever the best terms are that they can get. And then they create their own repayment schedule. And my mind was blown by the fact that just because I have a 15-year mortgage doesn't mean I pay it off in 15 years. Just because I have a 30-year mortgage doesn't mean I could pay off either mortgage in 6 years. So why not take out the longest term mortgage I can get and pay it off as, you know, if I want to pay it off quickly, pay it off in 6 years. Like the term the bank dictated had nothing to do with my repayment schedule.
That's absolutely true. And you actually have more flexibility, right? And this is probably another topic for another day. But yeah, you have with the longer term mortgage, you have much more flexibility in case of, say, you lose a job or something like that. And you can still pay off early if you don't lose your job. And it's just, yes. Correct.
Greg, what about credit cards? Because for me, when I was younger, I thought credit cards are the devil. And as I've gotten older and I think a lot more responsible, you know, credit cards are a key part of my daily spending.
When I was a kid, I mean, like a kid, I mean, too young to have a credit card, I didn't understand how they worked. I'm like, wait a second. I can pay for this item with 10 bucks cash, or I can put it on the card and they don't charge me a premium and I can wait 30 days to pay instead of paying right now. Why wouldn't I put everything on a card?
Yeah.
It never even entered my head that people would let balances accrue. So when I got a credit card, I decided to be one of those people whom the credit card companies would not make money off. But it beats cash as a way to track your expenses and a way to build rewards. I mean, I have a credit card that's branded with Hilton Honors, right? I mean, I stay in Hilton hotels a few times a year anyway. And now I get free stays without, this is the important part, this is the part that should be underlined and bold-faced in the Stacking Benjamins transcript, without changing my behavior.
Yeah, that's funny for me. Once I got to the point that I knew that I could pay off the balance every month, and that I would pay off the balance every month, that's when the whole credit card game changed for me. Len, you had something like this too that you wrote about, now that I think about it, with annual fees on credit cards.
Oh, paying? Yes. Yeah, sometimes paying the annual fee is actually worth it if you're going to get enough benefits out of it.
Yeah, you came around on that.
Yes.
You came around on that because at one point, I remember you were pretty anti, if it's an annual fee, you can't have it.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes. I did that with my, and we'll give, Greg gave Hilton a plug. I'm going to give Marriott a plug. My Marriott Rewards card, you know, I've refused to buy one to get one for many years just because I was stubborn about paying their, I think it's, what is it now, $89 or $99 a year fee. But then I sat down, I thought about it. I was like, you know what? I get way more benefits than $99 per year for, you know, if I took advantage of it. And so, yeah, now I have no problem at all paying it.
Can I jump in here? Because this conversation started as a discussion on an article in which the author said, if you publicly commit to a deeply held belief, you are more likely to hold to that belief, even in the face of mounting evidence to the contrary.
Right.
And something like an annual fee on a credit card, I mean, is that really a deeply held belief? It seems like it's just more of just kind of a opinion of the moment.
No, because if you, man, well, it's funny. This is a great can of worms, because if any of you have hung out with the Dave Ramsey crowd, you know, I mean, a credit card is evil, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, credit card is evil. It's evil. It's evil. Do not have a credit card. And so, I mean, it is a clear black and white, deeply held. Talk to Dave Ramsey about a credit card. He's going to tell you deeply held belief. Nope.
Sure. You can have a deeply held belief about whether or not a person should use credit cards. You know, the Dave Ramsey idea of like, you know, if you play with snakes, you're going to get bit. Sure, that's a deeply held belief. But like, should you pay $89 for this or not? Seems like we're moving a little bit more into the peas rather than the steak here.
Well, we are, because and to be fair to me, that wasn't the question that I asked. The question that I asked was one that I had in my head after I read this article, which is, what are some beliefs we had about money management that have changed in our head? You know, as we aged, do we have different beliefs now than we had before? I don't know that they necessarily need to be the deepest belief ever. But I did see, to your point, Paula, when I was in the trenches working with families, I would see people hang on to some pretty dumb stuff. I mean, just some pretty dumb beliefs, like the 15-year mortgage. No, I just feel better with a 15-year mortgage. Well, why? Why wouldn't we make the payment as if it's a 15-year mortgage and take out the 30? I remember the exact client. I also remember that at that particular point in time, which doesn't happen all the time, the interest rates were identical. And the yield curve is rarely wow. ever flat, right? Rarely ever. But on this particular time, the interest we pay would have been, and I just couldn't get it through his head. No, I just feel more comfortable with a 15-year. So you feel more comfortable with the bank telling you what to do. You don't trust yourself? Which is fine. It just was this block in his head.
I guess just my broad thought is that there are a few core fundamental beliefs and values that people hold about money, insofar as money is a reflection of either their emotional state or their priorities, or, you know, however it is that a person relates to the world of finance. It's, I think, rare, unless sometimes you have a change of heart, sometimes you have a coming to Jesus moment, but I think it's rare for those core beliefs to change. But all of the ancillary ideas that surround the periphery, you know, the details and the noise, sure, I think that's in a constant state of flux.
Yeah, what are some of those that have changed for you lately?
I mean, when I started writing about money, I thought that I could communicate to my audience simply by showing them the math. And as I've been a finance writer for 6 years now, I've come to realize that addressing behavioral components, addressing emotional components, talking more about values and belief systems, that actually resonates much more than compounding interest charges do.
Greg, when did you first realize that unscrewing the light in your oven wasn't going to save you that much money?
I still haven't figured that out yet. I think I need to apply a few hundred hours more research into it.
Right. But, right. Several thousand words.
But Paul is right, though. I mean, I tried in the glory days of Control Your Cash to explain to people that your financial decisions should not have any emotional component to them. Your non-financial relationships, your relationship with your loved ones, with your parents, whatever, that's where emotions should be important. And when it comes to exchanging money for goods and services, leave emotions out of it. And I say that until I'm blue in the face. And I know that intellectually it's true, but it really doesn't resonate with people.
Yeah, isn't that? It's always the stories, which is why there's so many of those blogs, Greg, that you like to make fun of.
And they're the Hydra. I mean, you cut the head off one and right. 20 more appear.
they totally do. Hey, got to take a quick break from our awesome discussion with Greg, Len, and Paula, because it's time for our FreshBooks FinTech segment. And if you're racing against the clock to wrap up three projects, prepping for a meeting later in the afternoon, all while trying to tackle a mountain of paperwork, guess what? You're a freelancer, aren't you? Yes, you are. Challenging? Yes, but our friends at FreshBooks believe the rewards are so worth it because the working world's changed, and with the growth of the internet, there's never been more opportunities for the self-employed. And to meet that need, FreshBooks is excited to announce the launch of an all-new version of their cloud accounting software. Redesigned from the ground up, custom built for exactly the way you work, get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, to get paid quickly. The all-new FreshBooks is not only ridiculously easy to use, it's also packed full of powerful features. We use it here at Stacking Benjamins. Kathleen and I absolutely love it. Create and send professional-looking invoices in less than 30 seconds. Said this before, I'll say it again. 30 seconds is a lie. That is fake news. It's more like 10 seconds. It's so amazing how very quickly you can create and send professional looking invoices. I was blown away by how quickly we do that. Set up online payments at just a couple clicks, get paid up to 4 days faster. And you can see when people have seen the invoice, which puts an end to the guessing game and the whole, well, we haven't, could you send that again? Yeah, I know you already opened it. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to our listeners at Stacking Benjamins. And to claim it, here's what you do. You head to stackingbenjamins.com/FreshBooks. That's stackingbenjamins.com/FreshBooks. And you enter the words Stacking Benjamins in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And there you go. You have your 30-day free trial of FreshBooks. And I'd give them 30 days. I'm glad that we did. When I first started using FreshBooks, I was a little skeptical. And when Justine took us through it, I thought, oh, well, this is way easier than I thought it would be. And then we started using it, and it's just absolutely amazing. StackingBenjamins.com/FreshBooks. On the FreshBooks FinTech Friday segment, we do not endorse any of the companies that we have here. We just want to show you all the cool things going on in the FinTech and financial related arenas. And man, we've got a great one for you today. Justin Howell stopping by the basement to tell us all about Rise. So let's say hello. Justin Howell headed down to the basement. And Justin Howell joins us in the basement. Have a seat, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you? Well, nice place you have here.
Well, thank you. Yeah. How about the Bon Jovi posters? And what a good time, huh?
It's pretty cozy.
Yeah. Yeah. Cozy is a better word than scary, which is what most our guests use. So I'm very glad you said that. Well, let's talk about you, though, because Rise is brand spanking new. Looking great, man. It's like you guys got a great shiny polish on it. When you first started Rise, was it an opportunity that you saw in the marketplace, or were you kind of frustrated yourself with your own financial planning?
You know, Rise was one of those things that didn't really have an aha moment. You know, I can give you the long story on this. You guys can cut it down, right?
Right, yeah.
It's been a journey. It's definitely been a journey. And it definitely started with a problem. You know, if I had to trace that journey all the way back, it definitely started in 2008 in the downturn. And at the time I was working at a big hedge fund in New York, which was like having a front row seat to Armageddon as everything melted down, right?
Right.
But in the midst of all that craziness, I got a call from my parents one day. And they were saying, you know, gosh, everything's just falling apart for us here. What do we do? And I realized at that moment that I had no idea. You know, I didn't have an answer for them. I didn't have an answer for me about how to manage my money, let alone help my parents with theirs. And that said, I should probably go figure it out. You know, so I started asking around in my network, looking for answers, and I didn't find any. In fact, I kept finding that people were having the same problem. I've probably talked to over 1,000 people since then about managing their money. And virtually everybody has this same fundamental problem, which is, how do I balance spending today with saving for tomorrow? Particularly given that we live in a world that is 100% designed to help you spend. So that was clearly like the crux of the problem. And we said, you know, that's the problem we want to go solve. We started looking around for what kind of solutions exist out there to do that. And in our research, the one thing that kept popping up that was actually working was a 401k, because it forces you to pay yourself first, right? If you don't see it, you don't spend it. And so we asked ourselves, look, if a 401k works for retirement savings, why isn't there a 401k for everything else that's not retirement? And it was asking that question that led directly to Rise, which at its core is a simple way to save before you spend.
Well, and it's funny because when I look at the interface, you're right, it does seem very simple. And I know there's a lot that makes it simple. There's a lot of tough stuff under the hood that makes it look so simple. Take us through it.
Oh, man,
it.
You have no idea.
Yeah, seemed like a good idea at the time, right?
Yep, yep. There's nothing like being naive when you first start this stuff, right?
Right. So, Justin, when I go to the Rise site, what do I see? What happened?
Sure. So, you know, Rise at its core is about helping you automatically save for goals that you really care about. And it's super simple, right? So you go and you sign up and you choose at least one goal to get started. It can be anything you want. Maybe like moving out of your mom's basement, for example.
No.
It's a good goal.
Overrated.
You're never going to leave, huh? Right.
Free rent.
It's hard to beat free rent. Right. I'll take you on that. But so you choose a goal to get started. Then you securely connect your bank account. And then Rise automatically moves the right amount of money from your checking account to your Rise account on a schedule that you choose and spreads it across your goals.
Awesome. So you then, you set up the goal, you tell it how much money, and you give it the time frame. So then it comes back with, you need to save X amount per what? Per week, per day, per month?
So we encourage you to set up so that you save immediately after each paycheck. So it really acts like that 401k, right? But in fact, it's a completely flexible schedule. You can do whatever you want with it. You know, and so if you're a 1099 person, we've got lumpy income and stuff, you can set it up however you want.
Does it tell me then, hey, you get paid every other Friday, so why don't we take it out that day?
Right now, we give you a little bit of messaging around that saying, hey, pick when you get paid.
Yeah.
Maybe do a day or two after that, right? But right now, we're not looking directly into your checking account and saying, oh, we see exactly when you get paid here. Let's do it that day.
Yeah, but still, that's really awesome because you're right. I mean, with the 401k, people tell me, well, no, I'm not saving any money. And I say, well, you have this 401k. They're like, oh yeah, that's not saving. Like you said earlier, it's so easy. You don't even think it is saving. So why wouldn't you set up this stuff the same way? So I do that. And then the amount that we agreed upon then comes out, or does the amount fluctuate? How does that work?
So right now we focus on it being a fixed amount.
Yeah.
So you can actually set it up within the system. So, you know, maybe if you're somebody who has all their bills in the first half of the month, and so you can only save a little bit in the first half of the month, but then you think you can save more in the second half of the month, it's got the ability to do that as well. But we focus on helping you build that basic financial habit of putting money aside on a regular basis for the future.
Nice. And then what about, you know, you talked about the difference between saving and matched with our budget. Does Rise do anything at that point that kind of tells me, hey, we think you have X amount that you can save?
We're not doing that right now.
Yeah.
You know, our focus is instead, you know, start putting that set of money aside each month. Doesn't matter if it's $5.
Right.
And then what we'll do is we'll help you increase that amount over time. You know, you've seen all these great studies out there about 401ks, how you can literally double or triple the amount of money that people are putting into a 401k. with very little impact on their lifestyle for most people, right? If you have a 401k, it's because you adjust to the fact that, you know, the amount of money in my checking account, that's essentially my safe to spend because I've already put money aside for the future. I've already taken care of that stuff. So if you're using RISE correctly, you could spend your checking account down to zero because you've already put money aside for the future.
Yeah, it's like zero sum budgeting you've done.
And that's actually, I mean, that was a big part of this stuff. You know, when you look at budgeting, it just doesn't work for the vast majority of people. You know, we do a lot of psychology and behavioral design with RISE, and we're just not psychologically wired as humans to deal with a lot of different constraints. You know, if you start trying to tell me with like a budgeting app, hey, don't spend more than this on rent and this on groceries and this at the bar on Friday, like my head explodes, right?
Right.
But if you give me one number, one constraint, which is, okay, there's the money in your checking account. That's what you can spend. I can deal with that, right? So that's kind of how we do an end around all the budgeting stuff, which is just focus on putting some money aside for the future, put it towards the goals that are going to move the needle for you, and then take the money in your checking account. That's your safe to spend.
You're reminding me, Justin, of this big Canadian financial guy, David Chilton, who says budgets are baloney. People do what they have to do. And so you're telling me that RISE helps you figure out what you have to do, set the money aside, and then the goals, like you said, the goals are all taken care of.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, after that, go nuts.
Yeah, right.
Like we are not dogmatic about, you know, you got to pinch every penny. It's just about being a little bit more conscientious with where that money is going, right?
I've got two more questions. One is, and these are both from your website, risesaving.com. It says the longer you rise, the better. It says RISE's revolutionary approach to savings uses behavioral design and technology to identify opportunities when you can save a bit more so that you can reach your goals faster. Tell me about that, Justin.
Well, you know, when it comes to using behavioral design, we're essentially utilizing a lot of the same techniques that, you know, the consumption world has used to get us to spend for a long, long time, right? So we're doing things like, you know, kind of showing you how you're doing versus your peers, some social comparison, some benchmarking. It's the single strongest motivation we can possibly give you to put a little bit more in there. And we're going to be experimenting with a whole bunch of different things as we move forward. You know, what's the right way to kind of get you up to the level that's really safe for you to be saving each month, where we're not pushing too hard, but you're also really effectively meeting your goals as fast as you possibly can. So that's a bunch of the experimentation that we'll be doing as we get more and more people into RISE. You know, the RISE gets more and more powerful the more people who are using it, because we actually have a whole lot more behavioral data and we can start really personalizing the experience for each riser. You know, if you and I are both using RISE, similar interface, at the end of the day, we're different people. We should have slightly different experiences. We care about different things. We're probably at slightly different points in life, right?
Yeah.
That's where we're looking to get to with RISE.
Gotcha. We've talked before on the show about, like, with your emergency fund, setting up an account that, you know, is a little bit more difficult to get to. I know that you guys use a separate RISE account, which the money goes into. And on your site, it says that money earns 5 times the national average. Is that so you're paying interest on a savings account?
Yeah. So I think it's actually up to 10 times the national average, given where how interest rates have actually gone up. But big banks haven't raised their savings rates at all, right? Nice of them. Yeah, so that money earns 65 basis points right now, which, as I said, is about 10 times the national average. And that number will go up as interest rates continue to go up.
Got it. And then how easy is it for me to get my money out of my RISE account?
It's super simple. You just log into your RISE account, say how much you want to transfer back to your checking account, and it'll be there 2 to 3 business days later, depending on your bank.
Right now, it's a mobile-friendly web app, but you have actual apps on the way.
Yep, we're working on putting out probably native apps, iOS and Android, second half of this year. But for now, we're a really nice, very mobile-friendly web app.
Awesome. And those will be available then on every platform later on.
Exactly.
Cool. I have to ask this. We ask this of everybody, is obviously everyone's worried about security with their money and with their data. How do you guys protect your customers' data?
You can't be a financial company in this day and age and not have security as basically your top priority. And it absolutely is for us. So all of your personal information is securely stored, is fully encrypted. The money in your RISE account is fully insured up to $250,000, just like your checking account. So yeah, it's basically our top priority.
Awesome. And then coming up, well, you've already told me so many things you guys are doing, not just experimenting with, but also with the apps coming out. Any other things that you foresee just over the horizon for RISE?
Well, if you look at where we're at right now with RISE, we're currently in private beta. kicking the tires with a couple hundred customers, working out the final kinks before we open up the doors more widely next month. But we've already had over 10,000 people sign up to use Rise when we do open those doors, which is, you know, super gratifying. I think it's just a testament to the fact that saving is a really big problem for almost everybody, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, the real focus right now is just to get Rise in the hands of as many people as we possibly can. You know, we've got a system that we think works really well. It's really elegant. It's a great experience. And we just want to get that in front of as many people as we possibly can. You know, we started Rise not just to solve our own problems, but because, you know, this is kind of one of the defining problems of our generation. We've got 80 million millennials who are collectively saving nothing right now. So it's a big, massive undertaking, and we want to be part of solving that problem.
You must have in the private beta already some surprising results. I know it seems like everybody I talk to that's in the fintech community, when even in private beta, they start seeing some surprising things that they didn't expect. Do you have a story or two for us, Justin, along those lines?
Oh man, there are so many. You know, with a goal-based system like ours, it's crazy the kinds of things that people are actually saving for. I mean, one thing that's nice to see is, I think it's now like 50% of our customers have specifically signed up to start building an emergency fund, building a rainy day fund, which is great because that really is the right first step for almost everybody. We've had people sign up to save for pretty much everything under the sun that you could imagine. Like, it's pretty weird.
Well, it sounds like you have a ton of work still on your plate, Justin, and actually even going to the site. It's really cool what you guys are undertaking. Congratulations on all your success so far. Where do people go to sign up so that they can get it the day it's available?
Yeah, so you can head over to risesaving.com. That's spelled Rise, R-I-Z-E. And you can sign up to be part of that wait list. You'll be the first people to know when we actually open the doors in a couple weeks. But actually, you know, special offer for Stacking Benjamins listeners who I'm pretty sure are right in the middle of our core target customers and are pretty savvy people themselves. If you want to skip that whole line, get right to the top of the queue and actually get in right now as a beta tester, help us actually craft this product moving forward, we would love to have you.
Awesome.
So you can just reach out to us, send a quick note to hello@risesaving.com, and we'll get you in as fast as we possibly can.
Awesome. And if you're out and about and don't have a place to write that handy, you know what? We'll have that in the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Thanks for hanging out, Justin. I really appreciate the time and good luck with the launch.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having us down here in this awesome basement.
Thanks. A big thanks again to Justin for stopping by the basement. Once again, the link to get more about Rise, risesaving.com. And of course, we'll have a link on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. All right, let's head right back to our exciting conversation with Paula Pant from Afford Anything, Greg McFarlane from Control Your Cash and Investopedia, and Mr. Len Penzo from LenPenzo.com. Let's move on to our third piece, which is the most important one of the evening. This comes to us from Yahoo Style, which is the place Len reads nonstop. Aren't you always on? And actually, this was written by Cosmo. And that is your favorite magazine, isn't it, Len?
Well, sometimes. Depends what kind of mood I'm in.
Katrina Harvey Jenner wrote this. A 17-year-old girl won the lottery, but Len Penzo says it ruined her life. 17 years old, her life is ruined. How bad do you feel for her?
Yeah, that's terrible. And I'm still trying to figure out how her life got ruined. I'm not sure if it's because she spent all her money and her lifestyle is now bigger than she can afford again or what. But I mean, this just gets me. I cannot believe she's thinking of suing for a decision that she made. She wants to sue the lottery. It just makes no sense to me, Joe. None.
So to explain to the people listening, she won the Euro Millions at age 17 and now 4 years later at 21. She claims the stroke of good luck, quote, ruined her life. Back in 2013, Edinburgh-born Jane scooped, and I pronounced that wrong, Edinburgh-born Jane scooped a million euros, or that's not euros,
pounds.
Is it? That's
British pounds.
Thank you. Scooped £1 million with a Euro Millions ticket. At the time, she obviously thought it was amazing. But in the years since, she's realized, Greg, that being a millionaire comes with an abundance of pressure and is now considering suing Camelot, who runs the Euro Millions, for negligence. Sounds like she's got a great case.
Winning £1 million doesn't ruin your life. Having a child ruins your life, especially when you're 17. by her logic, if somebody had stolen £1 million from her, she'd be riding on cloud nine. My favorite part of the story is that this dingbat wants to sue the lottery corporation for giving her the jackpot. Exactly what is she going to sue them for? Money? she wants money from the lottery corporation?
Right. That's why I was thinking she's probably run out of money and she just needs more funds. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And most importantly, I did a little digging, even going back before the original source, Cosmo, to the original source, Metro in the UK. She got a DUI last week at a McDonald's drive-thru, which brings us back to our original story. She is choosing to spend money on houses and purple Range Rovers while economizing on restaurant food. So, and she's also spending money on defense attorneys, it seems.
Yeah, she used the money to purchase a second property, a holiday in the Maldives. She underwent a boob job, and she bought a purple Range Rover, which, Greg, is your favorite color Range Rover.
Coming from a 2 Range Rover family, the idea of desecrating it with purple paint just it makes me really uncomfortable. And this girl wasn't living on her own. In fact, she was living with her mom in government housing, which leads me to believe that that's actually a first property she bought and not a second one. My point is that she had a relationship, some relationship with her parent, who could have steered her in the right direction as far as financial advice goes. But yeah, suing and wanting anything other than money makes this woman sound just slightly hypocritical. And going public with her woes makes it even worse. If she says that £1 million she was set for life, well, no, it's not going to set you for life. You're still going to have to pay attention to your spending. I truly hate people like this. Yeah, I mean, I hate almost everyone, but especially people like this.
Hey, why? I have a question. Why do they call it, you ever think about it? Why do they call it a boob job? Isn't it two boobs? Shouldn't it be a boobs job?
A boobs job. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to write to them? Letter to the editor right there.
Maybe it's like a pair of boobs and therefore it's singular.
I don't know. Or maybe she just got one boob done. Maybe that's why she's mad.
I don't know. Actually, Paula, just one point in her defense is that what she says she's suing for is the fact that she was 17 years old. She was too young to be trusted with that amount of money. Do you believe that?
You hear stories of lottery winners spiraling into self-inflicted catastrophe at almost any age. You know, while it's true that your decision-making, like frontal cortex, may not have fully developed at the age of 17, that doesn't mean that mistreating a large sum of money is exclusive to youth.
Right. But is there a certain age where it should be cut off? I think how old do you have to be in the United States to buy a ticket, or does that vary from state to state?
I don't know. I assume it's maybe 18.
Yeah. I don't know the answer.
So, So what is really the difference between 17 and 18? I mean, yes, all cutoffs are arbitrary, but 17 versus 18, I'm not sure it makes a huge difference. At 18, you can enlist in the military and go fight on the front lines. You know, at the age of 18, you can make some very big decisions with your life. So let's not treat people like they're children for too long. Let's let people be adults, because they're going to have to be adults very soon.
You ever think about, Paula, what you'd buy if you won the lottery?
No.
Never. just because it's never going to happen?
Yeah, because I don't believe in that type of thinking. B, because I think that if winning the lottery is synonymous with having a large sum of money, then my brain is going to be thinking about how can I proactively create said large sum of money by virtue of, growing my business or doing something that is within my internal locus of control. That's what I think about. That's how I dedicate the limited bandwidth in my brain. You've got to be very careful about how you direct your thoughts. Otherwise, they'll direct you.
You know who else said that was Sherlock Holmes. You ever read Sherlock Holmes?
No. I mean, I read a couple of like kids' versions of the Sherlock Holmes stories, but no, I haven't really read.
I'm surprised, Greg, she knows who Sherlock Holmes is. But
Sherlock Holmes is one of my favorite authors.
Yeah, that's really nice. Good work.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, so when Greg was trying to get me back there and I narrowly escaped. The piece that Sherlock Holmes said was that you only have so much room in your brain. So he knows nothing about trivia. He knows zero about trivia because there's not enough room.
That's why I'm so smart.
that is why, because you don't know who Burns and Allen are or any of those people, right? All right.
No idea.
Yeah. Well, you guys were particularly surly today. I liked it. That was good. Let's talk about what you are up to. Greg, we'll start with you. How the knee's healing, and when you coming back stateside?
Technically, I am stateside, but I'll be coming back stateside in about two weeks' time, because it is much easier to find a microphone cord on the mainland.
Yeah, that's right. To the mainland, not stateside. Len, what's happening at LenPenzo.com?
Well, the top 40 ways, if you're looking to improve your credit score, I've got 40 ways you could do it. And many of them are very easy. But let me bring this up one other article. I have a guest author. Her name's Paula Pant, and she's got an article on LenPenzo.com. It's an oldie but goodie, but I'm bringing it back. And it's titled, An Avid Rag Reader Confesses, They Make Me Want to Spend More. Remember that one, Paula?
Wow. Yeah, blast from the past. I wonder if my opinion has still stayed nice. The same from then.
Oh, don't try to back out of that one yet. We have to paint you into a corner with that one. Right. Those deeply held beliefs, Len, that she had way back when.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Paula, what's happening over at Afford Anything?
On the Afford Anything podcast, I'm trying something new. I'm doing my first episode that is just me talking about a philosophy of money. So it's not an interview. It's not an Ask Paula where I answer listener questions. It's just me kind of rocking the mic solo and discussing frameworks and ideas and assumptions around money and our relationship with it. So it'll either be great or it'll suck, but I'm really interested in knowing what people say.
But it's an awesome experiment at Afford Anything.
Yes.
Great.
Yes, hey, absolutely.
Thanks for playing, guys.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.
Oh, that's going to do it for today. And what an exciting week back, besides the fact that I'm just finally now starting to recover from the flu. It was an amazing week back. If you missed our Monday or Wednesday episodes this week, you're going to want to go back and listen to both of those because those were some great radio. Monday, Amanda Steinberg from dailyworth.com, one of the biggest financial sites on the internet, dropped by. And then on Wednesday, Liesl Sutter helped us with some tax tips. But more than that, we had some great Haven Lifeline calls. We had some phenomenal trivia. Well, I shouldn't build Doug's ego, but Monday, especially when he's selling his dogs, that was a particularly funny episode for us to write. Hey, you know what else is fun? Heading to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. Because when you go to Magnify Money, you know what happens? You end up with the best checking account, savings account, and debt products that are out there. Why not have a comprehensive debt strategy instead of just some debt? Doesn't that make more sense? Put together your own strategy with the best products that are available by heading to Magnify Money, stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. And when you get there, what you're going to find is that it's super easy, just a series of drop-down menus. What are you looking for? And bam, they very quickly tell you which ones have the least fine print, which ones are the easiest to get into, and which products have the highest and lowest interest rates out there. 92% of the products that are out there are at Magnify Money, and the average user of MagnifyMoney.com saves $450 while they shop. How great's that? StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. And what you'll find at Magnify Money is that wherever they compete, SoFi, spelled S-O-F-I, is number one wherever they are. And if you head to StackyBenjamins.com/SoFi, you know what you're going to find? They're the leader in marketplace lending, helping you with your student loans, personal loans, your mortgages. Here's how it works. You point your browser over to stackybenjamins.com/SOFI, and it'll ask you what type of help you're looking for. And from that point, you'll fill in a few details about you. And like our friend Dan Macklin over at SoFi says, in a few seconds, in most cases, you'll know everything about how they can work with you. You'll pick from different terms, check out the interest rates on variable and fixed rate options, and get the ball rolling. In fact, it's so easy. MagnifyMoney.com lists their fine print rating as A+, meaning it's super easy to understand. You're looking for lower rates and a good partner. They're looking for a new member to help. For your mortgage, student loan, personal loans, head to stackybenjamins.com/SoFi, and they'll throw in $100 if you use our link for your student loan refinance or your next personal loan. That's stackybenjamins.com/SOFI. Hey, let's talk about a couple things. Next week, we're going to begin our new game. At least I say we're going to begin our new game because I've been under the weather. My game creating brain has not been working. So if somebody's got a game, I'll give you your choice of one of the fine t-shirts over at stackybenjamins.com/shirts. I'll buy you one if you want to create the next game. And don't worry, if I don't have any takers on that, that's fine. I will easily be able to create another one for next week. However, don't have one right now because I've been so under the weather. And if you're waiting for prizes from me, I'm also going to go back and play the flu card again. That stuff, I've got it all sitting right here, right behind me here in the basement, ready to head out to the post office. Hopefully that happens in the next day or two here. Let's talk about next week, though, because next week, not only will I hopefully finally be feeling better, but also we have a phenomenal week for you. A great guy. You know, here's the thing. SoFi talks about helping you find a job. That's not just lip service, right? We're so used, I think, to marketing messages that we get the lip service from these other companies out there. But SoFi has a vice president in charge of job strategy, and he's got a team of people. Mark Gashy, that guy, is coming down to the basement on Monday because he had an awesome blog post, and he's been everywhere. By the way, Mark Gashy has, from being a professor at the University of Chicago and Northwestern, the Kellogg School of Management, UCLA. He has been everywhere. Now he's with SoFi, and he's talking about trading up your career in 2017. So if you're looking to trade up, we've got you covered on Monday. And then on Wednesday, it's all you because it's Letters Day. We haven't had a Letters Day in a good 6 months, maybe even longer. And we're going to take a lot of letters on Wednesday's show. On Friday, instead of FinTech, I believe we're going to have Suzanne Lucas down here, the evil HR lady, talking HR. So it's a big HR week. You're going to upscale your career. You're going to make sure that your benefits follow along with Suzanne. And then we're going to answer as many letters as we possibly can. So big week next week on the show. Can't wait. Hope you can join us. But before then, have a fantastic weekend, peeps. Go stack some Benjamins. We'll see you Monday.
Special thanks to Justin Howell from Rise. You'll find more about Rise on their website, risesaving.com. That's Rise with a Z. Then you got to carry the one, and that you still can't find it? All right. We'll have a link on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Josal Sihai, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. And a preemptive you're welcome for all the accolades I know you're planning on sending me about the amazing job I did today. You're right on. I am definitely a talented and good-looking guy.
What's wrong with you?
It's either this show or indigestion. I hope it's indigestion.
Why?
It'll get better in a little while.